is next.
Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters Today. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you from WILL AM 580 in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. It is a lovely, spectacular fall Sunday here in the heartland of East Central Illinois, and we have got a terrific show, we think, for you lined up. I hope you'll be ready, willing, and able to join us for the next hour for a live show here from the studios of WILL. But before we go to our program today, Media Matters, please join me right now for Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
Welcome to 95.3 Camp FM, Katrina Alternate Media Project. We're here in the Astrodome area here in Houston, Texas, and we're broadcasting to survivors of Katrina.
It's a shaky signal of just 6 watts, but it's now on the air, a low-power FM station dedicated to the thousands of displaced housed in Houston's Reliant Park Convention Complex began broadcasting Tuesday, September 13th, after a week and a half of stonewalling by local officials. KAMP is broadcasting from a trailer in the parking lot outside the Astrodome, relaying information on where the displaced can find food, housing, and job information, and how to effectively search for missing friends and family. Houston area musicians are stopping by the studio to play a song or two. Most importantly, KAMP volunteers are going into the convention complex and coming out with the stories of those inside, many of whom are still very hungry for reliable information.
We was in the Superdome. We weren't in contact with any media, any TV, nothing. We just was going by word of mouth. And there were so many rumors, we didn't know what was true and what wasn't true. So we didn't know what to do. We didn't know, no newspapers, anything. So we didn't know what to do. But I'm glad you guys have something set up where we can find out what's really going on.
Unfortunately, local officials are still interfering with the KAMP project. The displaced are forbidden from walking across the parking lot to the station's studio, thereby cutting off direct access to it for reasons unknown. Micro radio is blooming in New Orleans as well. A 10-watt unlicensed station is on the air in the Algiers neighborhood, providing information on emergency services and airing recorded interviews with some who've stayed through the storm and flood. Community media activists are also setting up Wi-Fi networks to further reconnect the area to the outside world.
Members of the Federal Communications Commission toured storm damage in Louisiana and Mississippi and held a special meeting in Atlanta, Georgia on September 14th to discuss their findings. Emergency responders continue to struggle with barely working dispatch systems. Many are frustrated by the lack of compatibility between the various radio systems in use. Commissioner Michael Copps calls this a major failure of the government's post-9/11 response. A special commission established to investigate the attacks on New York and D.C. recommended last year that the government implement a crash program to upgrade emergency communication services and standardize them across the country for interoperability. Because that has not been done, emergency response to Katrina suffered and continues to be hampered.
When you watch search and rescue teams from Virginia and law enforcement officials from Florida and EMS medics from California and countless others selflessly making their way to the Gulf Coast to help, don't we owe them a system that enables them to communicate once they get there?
To that end, FCC Chairman Kevin Martin announced that more than $200 million will be made available immediately to help rebuild the radio and phone networks that have been damaged or destroyed. The FCC will also create a special bureau focused exclusively on public safety and homeland security issues. One of its first tasks will be to hammer out a nationwide communications plan linking all police, fire, and paramedic units with hospitals and other emergency response resources. How long it would take to build such a network and how much it will cost is unknown.
Federal civilian authorities have backed off from threats to censor press coverage in storm-damaged areas after a lawsuit filed by CNN forced the issue. A federal judge issued a temporary restraining order prohibiting FEMA and other federal agencies from keeping journalists out of rescue and recovery efforts, which led FEMA to rescind its previous zero-access policy. However, the Army is actually running the recovery operations, and journalists contend it has broken FEMA's pledge. In New Orleans, reporters have been threatened with expulsion from the state if they report on the recovery of bodies.
In other news, the Inspector General at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is writing up a report on the behavior of CPB Chairman Ken Tomlinson. He's hinted the report will conclude that Tomlinson abused his position for partisan political purposes. The inquiry stemmed from Tomlinson's hiring of a conservative consultant to grade PBS and NPR programming for perceptions of liberal bias, an action Tomlinson should have informed the board about but did not. Tomlinson steps down as CPB chairman on September 27th, but the inspector general doesn't expect to publish his findings until November at the earliest, which unfortunately means Tomlinson will most likely go unpunished for his indiscretion and abuse of power.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here in WILL AM 580 in beautiful Urbana, Illinois, on a lovely Sunday afternoon in September. Today we have a live show coming to you from Campbell Hall on the campus of the University of Illinois. And our initial guest that we'd scheduled today was George Galloway, the British Member of Parliament, who is touring the United States now discussing his new book, Mr. Galloway Goes to Washington, about his experiences testifying before Congress and making what was probably the most emphatic anti-war statement that had been heard in the Capitol in some time. Unfortunately, Mr. Galloway's flight was canceled from Chicago to Madison, where he was to join us on the telephone. So he's scrambling around waiting to board a plane in O'Hare Airport, something I'm sure some of our listeners are familiar with. He won't be able to join us. But the good news, and to me, extraordinarily good news, is that we've been able at this last second to get, as a guest, someone we've been trying to get for a long time. And I guess the secret to getting him on for a live call was not to give him any advance notice. This is Jeff Cohen, the founder of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, TV host and commentator on several commercial news networks, as well as a producer on The Donahue Show. For my money, arguably the premier media critic of our generation. And Jeff Cohen, thank you very much for joining us today in Media Matters.
It's great to be with you. You snagged me at the spur of the moment.
It absolutely was a snag. I don't know if this is like really live media, and our listeners will appreciate this. Literally 3 or 4 minutes ago, we find out we're not getting Galloway. And I go to my, who would I like to have the most if I get anyone? And I go to Jeff Cohen, you answer the phone, thank God. And you have your daughter with you, I understand, today, Jeff.
Yes, I do. Cassidy Crystal Cohen has consented to letting her dad talk on the radio.
Well, if Cassidy Crystal Cohen lets you stay until 3 o'clock your time, she will be a happy girl, thanks to me. Let her know that, because I have a daughter her age. I know what girls like that age.
Okay.
Well, Jeff, let's get a little background for our listeners. You've been on the show on tape shows we've done in the past. But a little bit of your background and your experience over the last 20 years as a media critic and as a producer and journalist, so people know where you're coming from.
Yeah, I started FAIR in 1986. That's when there was the beginning of the media mergers. All three major broadcast TV networks had new owners. The Washington Press Corps was incredibly soft on a conservative president that by many accounts was asleep at the wheel, President Reagan. Very much what's happening today. I never thought the Washington Press Corps could be even softer on a president, but they may have surpassed themselves with their coverage of Bush. So I founded FAIR in 1986. We built it into a national organization with some presence. It has a regular magazine, Extra, now has a website, fair.org. But the way we would get into the media was when we would do these big studies of something very simple, who gets to speak on TV and radio and so-called objective news, and who doesn't. So we did studies of Nightline that showed the four most frequent guests were Kissinger, Alexander Haig, Elliot Abrams, and Jerry Falwell. Falwell was giving his expertise about AIDS on one show and homosexuality on another, Nightline. We did studies of who gets to speak on PBS and the NewsHour, same white male elite.
Yeah, Jeff, let me interrupt you for 1 second for the sake of our listeners and just say that, you know, we hear a lot of talk about the liberal media, and I know when FAIR was started It was sort of a voice in the wilderness saying that, no, it isn't a liberal media, at least within mainstream discourse. And you would expect if it's liberal media, then that the sort of experts, commentators on these shows would be, you know, Ralph Nader and Jesse Jackson and union leaders and such. But your research showed pretty conclusively the opposite. Is that right?
No doubt. I mean, we've done a lot of research on how often a voice of a labor union or the labor movement or the environmental movement or the consumer rights movement or the peace movement get on mainstream TV and radio. And it's sometimes too small to count. It's sometimes a fraction of a percent. You add all those movements together. In some of our studies, you've got up to 2-3% of total. And those are shows in which the representatives of corporations might have 20 or 30% of the total. Like in the Nightline study, for every one union spokesperson discussing a topic of economics, there were 7 corporate spokespersons. So, yeah, that's what we're looking at, is who gets to speak, who doesn't. If it were truly a liberal media, these statistics would be turned on their end. Every year, FAIR looks at which think tanks get quoted in the objective news, and 3 that dominate year after year are right-wing: the Heritage Foundation, American Enterprise, which is funded by big business, and the Cato Institute. And then along with those 3 right-wingers, there's usually 1 or 2 centrist ones. It's always Brookings is nearer at the top. But there's a number of think tanks that are progressive, and they're never in the top. So again, if in Washington and elsewhere, think tanks span the whole spectrum. You're right, Bob. If it were true that we had a liberal media, they would be going to different think tanks. They would be going to different members of Congress. They would be going to different former executive branch officials. I'll never forget a meeting I once had with Ted Koppel after we did our Nightline survey. And a bunch of people are in the room, and I said, well, it seems to be a prerequisite to get on your show to discuss anything foreign policy that you be a former member of the, quote, defense establishment, Kissinger, Haig, Abrams. I said, but there are people that used to be in the high levels of the establishment who are very much independent of it now, but they never make it to your airwaves. And I used as an example Daniel Ellsberg, who was a high-level Pentagon planner before he turned peace advocate during Vietnam. And again, Koppel's reaction was that guy is sort of on the fringe.
Jeff, along those lines, FAIR did an important bit of research just prior about the news coverage just prior to the U.S. invasion of Iraq.
Right.
And talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's typical. Again, the thing about FAIR studies that's scary is their consistency. They just don't change. Like when we did a survey a couple years ago, I'll get to the one you're talking about, but we did one a couple years ago, FAIR did on NPR. And found, you know, supposed to be the liberal media, but conservatives and Republicans outnumbered Democrats. And it was pretty stark. And people said, well, no wonder. You know, it's an objective newscast, and it has to go to those who are have their hands on the levers of power, which today Republicans run the White House and both houses of Congress. And the thing about that is FAIR did the same study of NPR in about 94, when the Democrats had the majority in the House and the Senate, and they had the White House, and the Republicans still had a advantage in the number of partisan sources interviewed by NPR. Now, the one you asked me about, Bob, is in the run-up to the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
FAIR did a very important survey of the nightly newscasts on PBS, ABC, CBS, and NBC, the 4 big broadcast newscasts each night. In the week before Colin Powell delivered his presentation to the UN pushing for war, and in the week after. So it was a 2-week survey. There were a total of 390 people interviewed, and of those, exactly, it was 393. Of those, only 3 were anti-war spokespersons. That's a fraction of 1%. That's not even the pretense of any debate. And it was, that survey was taken during a time that the public was evenly divided about a push toward war with Iraq. But in the big so-called liberal networks, CBS, NBC, ABC, and PBS, anti-war spokespersons were virtually excluded from the discussion. And the important thing about that is that during that time, the speech that Colin Powell delivered at the UN, which was so important in propelling the war, was just filled with inaccuracies and exaggerations. But if you got your news from mainstream television, as tens of millions of people do, you wouldn't know about those inaccuracies or exaggerations. You certainly didn't know about it in the week afterwards, because people who would have raised those issues were excluded. And with that exclusion went along all of the people that pose as liberals on TV and in the syndicated columns. It's the people about whom Fair says, "I'm not a leftist, but I play one on TV." They were extolling Powell for having made such an impressive presentation. And again, if you exclude the opposition, if you exclude independent experts, then a person in power, a person of a powerful perch like Colin Powell, Secretary of State, can get away with a speech that was just replete with inaccuracies, and the media isn't doing its job of being a reality check on officialdom.
Our guest today on Media Matters is Jeff Cohen, the founder and first president of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, the Media Watch Group based out of New York City. Cohen has also been a journalist, a newspaper columnist, a host on Fox Television, believe it or not, as well as a producer for The Donahue Show and much other work in the media over the past quarter century. We're very privileged to have Cohen join us on late notice today. Many of you who get our email were probably expecting to hear George Galloway. Mr. Galloway's flight was delayed, so he's scrambling around O'Hare Airport trying to catch a plane. So we're not able to get him today. We'll try to get him down the road. But we're fortunate to have Jeff Cohen today. If you'd like to call in with a question or comment for Jeff Cohen, the number 333-9455, the toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. Jeff, I want to jump ahead for a second, if we can, and talk about the press coverage in the past 3 weeks or so concerning Katrina and the Bush administration, because this was a situation where I think there was a general sense in the media themselves that the media had really found its spine there, and that the days of giving a pass, like it did to Colin Powell and the buildup to the war, to the Bush administration, we're now behind it. It wasn't going to take any more guff, any more spin. It was going to like demand hard answers, because it was going to make the Bush administration accountable for what it did. What's your sense of the press coverage of Katrina? Is that true, and are good things ahead of us?
I think it's pretty predictable. I mean, all of us noticed that in a week or two, especially the reporters that were there on the scene, day by day, reporting the utter misery and the need for water and food, and no help came day after day, that it was there was a lot of raw reporting, unfiltered reporting that was quite startling to American TV viewers, because it was honest, because it was so raw. And I think it was predictable that that wouldn't last too long.
You think it's over now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's around the internet, I'm seeing some real good reporting on how in some of these places like CNN, there were some CNN people that were very angry and reporting hour by hour what they saw and asking questions about where's the federal help, where's the help from anywhere in terms of a government agency. And at CNN, the tone has totally changed. At NBC, MSNBC, where I worked for almost a year, at MSNBC, the tone seems to have changed. It seemed to have lasted a couple weeks. Remember, there were even people on Fox, like Shepard Smith, who was just outraged that the federal government wasn't coming through to lend a hand to the poor people and people struggling to survive in New Orleans. And he's at Fox News. So I suspect that, FAIR has recently put out an email alert. You could get it at FAIR.org with quote after quote of people like Chris Matthews at MSNBC, the Washington Post editorial page, Elizabeth Bue Miller, the New York Times reporter who's famed for putting clothes on the emperor. And really some amazing stuff of sort of already getting into the Rovian damage control. Some were never outside of that orbit. I mean, let me just read a quote. Chris Matthews on August 31st, tonight, under the direct command of President Bush, the full force of the federal government is mobilized. A superpower of resources, manpower, and know-how heads on a historic rescue mission to the Gulf Coast. And then later he adds, Bush.
This sounds like the introduction to the old Superman TV series.
I know. Bush seems very much like the old Harvard Business School kind of guy that he is, the president of the United States today, because he delegated very clearly, unquote. This is the guy delegated to was Mr. Brown. So, again, I think what was shocking to the American people for those couple weeks is that TV, you know, seemed more maybe like Canada or England or, you know, places where you can have a mainstream television personality get on the air and actually sort of say what he sees or she sees. And without having to filter it through what does Karl Rove say we see? Or what, you know, the Bush administration says this, others say that, let's throw up our hands because we can't take a stand or that would be liberal bias. And because these reporters were on the scene seeing the utter misery and the utter failure of government at all level, but especially federal, and they were saying what they saw, and it was so unique and so rare, given the last 5 years of White House press relations, where no matter what the White House said, no matter how provably false the statements, at the moment those statements were said, if there were any corrections to those statements, it would be too little, too late, buried in the back pages or at the end of reports. And here, the top of all the news stories was the failure of the Bush administration and the failure of all levels of government, and even throwing in things completely unique for corporate media in recent years, things about class and racism. It was pretty odd. I think it was very unusual for especially TV viewers. But I have to watch every day because it's my job, and it seems like it's almost business as usual again. They got rid of Brown. He was the heat shield, the former head of FEMA, and it seems like it's, you know, the word in the media is blame game. Everyone's playing the blame game. And it's like there's always like a phrase that becomes the media catchphrase where they can throw up their hands and not do the kind of reporting that you're supposed to do if you're a journalist in a free society.
We're talking to Jeff Cohen today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We're doing a live show here on WILL AM 580. Our originally scheduled guest, George Galloway, was derailed on a plane flight, got slowed down, couldn't get to a phone to do the show today. Unfortunately, Jeff Cohen graciously agreed to sit in on literally a moment's notice. Jeff is the founder of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, a journalist, a producer, a TV host on the Fox News Network at one news channel at one point, and for my money, arguably one of the smartest media critics of our times. It's a pleasure and honor to have Jeff Cohen on the air with us. If people would like to call in, the phone number here at Media Matters is 333-9455. Our toll-free number is 1-800-222-9455. Jeff, I know you as much as anyone because of your work at FAIR and your work as a journalist inside newsrooms and really seeing at MSNBC and Fox and in newspapers how news is generated. I have wrestled with the argument that we have a liberal news media as much as anyone I know. And as I watched the coverage of Katrina, and I've watched it in the last couple of weeks, I kept wondering to myself, how would Fox and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh have responded to the exact same events had the president's name been Kerry or Gore and not Bush? What do you think?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that if the president, not only during Katrina, but in the wake of 9/11, the coverage would have been very different from all of those people that you mentioned. When you're thinking about Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, you know, every so often the actual Republican talking points leak. It's not something you have to deduce.
Yeah, actually mention that because I think a lot of our listeners might not be familiar with this phenomenon.
Yeah, well, the Republican National Committee will sometimes circulate talking points, and it's supposed to go to a select number of people, their own politicians, their own members of the committee, a few talk show hosts. But I remember a week or two ago, some of the Republican talking points leaked. I got a copy of them. And when you look at what the Hannitys and the Limbaughs say, they're so often working off of the daily Republican talking points or the weekly Republican talking points. So your question, Bob, how would these individuals who function as Republican operatives and Republican talking heads, how would they have handled Katrina if the president for the previous 5 years had been a Democrat? I think it's obvious. It would have been all attack, attack, attack.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine Rush Limbaugh would have come across like H. Rap Brown, with his concern for African Americans.
Right. Yeah, he would have changed his spots. So I just think, but the more important than how those guys would react, it's how does the, and this is something that I've been grappling with for years and decades, it's that mainstream centrist media.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I learned when I was in the MSNBC newsroom in the run-up to the war in 2002 that the number one fear of a working reporter or producer is the fear of doing anything that could get you or your channel accused of liberalism.
And why is that? What accounts for this fear?
It's from management. I mean, think about what happened in the run-up to the war. Almost everyone in mainstream centrist media got the story wrong. One of the biggest stories of the decade, almost all of it got it wrong. And how many people lost their jobs because they got the run-up to the war wrong in terms of weapons of mass destruction, what would happen after a U.S. occupation? They all swallowed, for the most part, mainstream media all swallowed the official fiction that came from a conservative administration. Not a single person lost their job. Not a single news executive, not a single TV host. The only one that I'm aware of that lost his job at MSNBC that was on the air, besides me, was Phil Donahue, because he was asking the right questions. And from the beginning there, for example, the fear was he would be too liberal. The show always had to be balanced. You know, it couldn't be, we can't make it a partisan show. Here was a guy they hired to be opposite Bill O'Reilly, who's basically giving you right-wing talking points. But the fear at MSNBC was that Donahue, a famous, perhaps the most famous liberal in American TV history, would be too partisan on the other side. They wouldn't allow it. And in the last few months of Donahue, they ordered us on that show that every time we booked a guest who was anti-war, we had to book two that were pro-war. If we booked two guests on the left, we had to book three on the right.
Now, were these commands to the Donahue show, which you were one of the senior producers of a few years ago on MSNBC when it was the primetime show, did these commands come from senior journalists above you and Donahue, or did they come from the business office, or both?
I think it's hard to know what the business office is. It comes from top management. I think it came ultimately it comes from General Electric, I believe.
And this MSNBC is co-owned by General Electric and Microsoft, but General Electric manages it?
Yeah, NBC manages it, and NBC is 100% owned by General Electric.
Mm-hmm.
It's run by the top news division in American television, which is NBC News. Every decision there of consequence was made by a Politburo that included management, the top people at MSNBC, I'd say the top two, and the NBC News president, that was a guy named Shapiro, and people appointed to be by GE to be the head of NBC. Number one is Bob Wright, longtime Republican. And then above Wright is Jeff Immelt, who's a Republican. And before Immelt, when I started there, right before I started, was Jack Welch, a well-known right-wing Republican who ran GE. Knowing that these are where these folks are coming from was the only explanation we could come up with for why they would not allow Phil Donahue to be Phil Donahue.
Now, was the same pressure, to your knowledge, being put on other talk show hosts on MSNBC, who, like a Joe Scarborough?
No, just the opposite. When Scarborough came in, again, that rule about having more rightists than leftists on the Donahue show, sometimes when we would press, we would demand an explanation for such a ridiculous policy, especially when we were up against Fox, which was creaming everyone else in cable news because they were explicitly to the right. And we said, well, at least for 1 hour, shouldn't we offer some counter-programming to Fox? You know, it was clear that that was a policy aimed for one show and one show only. When Joe Scarborough arrived, he was interviewed by the press, and he was told, oh, yeah, I've been hired to do sort of a conservative op-ed show. And he would begin every show with his right-wing opinion, sort of an editorial commentary, and then he would bring in a majority right-wing guest. That's after Donahue was canned. Before Donahue arrived, they had a guy at MSNBC, a show was hosted by Alan Keyes, which was ironic, not so ironically titled, Alan Keyes is Making Sense. And, you know, it would be a raving right-wing show, and the guest list also favored the right. So this idea that because he's a host leaning left, he's got to have a guest list tilting right, that was a policy for one and only one show on MSNBC, The Phil Donahue Show.
We're talking to Jeff Cohen today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today on WILL AM 580 from beautiful Urbana, Illinois, on an absolutely lovely Sunday afternoon this September. Our phone number here at the studio is 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Please call in. The phone lines are open. Jeff, one of callers left a message, didn't want to go on the air because they were on a cell phone, and asked if the press responds to public pressure in terms of what items and angles and stories to cover. I mean, if the example the caller gave was that someone had complained about the way animals were trapped during the hurricane and wanted more coverage of the animals. Does public pressure influence journalists and news? I mean, if people call up, say, I want this story covered, does it have that effect?
Yeah, within limits. There's always some give within a story where public pressure could get certain stories covered, certain angles looked at a little more.
But, you know, I'm thinking, not to interrupt you, but back going to the right before the war and the Colin Powell speech, when there was already an enormous anti-war movement, you know, there were a lot of people demanding that journalists, you know, be a lot harder on the Bush administration claims. At that time, that did not come later. At that time, there was considerable criticism of it. That didn't seem to have any effect.
Right. I think on some of the big picture issues of foreign policy and economics, public mobilization only moves things a tiny bit. But once the media are focused on one story wall to wall, hour after hour, there's, I think, a little bit of give, especially in Katrina, where coverage was very raw. Reporters were on the scene. It was hard for Washington to contain things.
And they really didn't have their talking points for a few days, did they? It seemed like they
talking points. Cheney was on vacation, and Bush was out, you know, with a guitar wrapped around him. They clearly were not able to contain it. This was a difficult thing. Domestic coverage is often a little more independent or a little more adversarial, not a lot, but a little more than foreign policy. And they can control in many ways the battlefield and control what reporters see in a foreign battlefield in a way they certainly couldn't control what reporters saw in New Orleans and southern Mississippi. And that was the, sort of the irony there, is every reporter that was there, often in bad conditions, was there reporting from the scene, wondering why they were there, but the federal government couldn't get help in. So I don't know. I think it's sort of a special case. But I do encourage, obviously, FAIR is an activism group and has gotten people on the air who would not have been repeatedly, mm-hmm. have gotten stories covered that would not have been, have gotten coverage of anti-war marches and rallies reconsidered and rewritten. And, you know, if you look at what FAIR has done for 20 years, obviously there are dozens and dozens of small victories. What I think you're asking is, what are the limits of those victories? What is the limit of, against which a huge mobilization will make, you know, will not push things any further? And I think you caught a good example is in the run-up to the war. In the run-up to the war, every poll was showing that More than half of the people did not want a war to begin unless certain conditions were met. None of those conditions were met, and the war happened anyhow. And the people who had that point of view, the majority point of view, were generally underrepresented. And in that fair survey around the time of the Powell speech, the Colin Powell speech at the UN, it was a fraction of 1% representing 50% of the people. No matter how much mobilizing that was done there on that big issue at that important time, we couldn't get things through. I've told people when I was at MSNBC, we interviewed around the same time when the mass demonstrations were heating up at the end of 2002. We interviewed for about 8 minutes the leader of the Free Martha Stewart movement, and he went from newsroom to newsroom.
Was that a serious movement? Or is that a joke?
No, it was more or less, it was a guy, we asked him, how many people were at your protest? And he said, well, there were four others besides me, but next time we're hoping to get six. Now, I've done some research on that guy because I was one of those who interviewed him. I didn't have control over but my...
This guy wasn't a professional comedian? It was a legitimate...
No, he wasn't a comedian, but he was very funny. Yeah, he was a... Many advocates are funny. He was a semi-serious guy selling stuff about Save Martha Stewart, aprons. He had a website. He must have made a huge amount of money, because if you go on the guy's website, SaveMartha.com, you will see that I interviewed him along with Curtis Sliwa on MSNBC. He was repeatedly interviewed on MSNBC, repeatedly interviewed Fox, and he was doing it on the basis that he was an activist with this little movement behind him. But at that very same time, you know, we were on the verge of the biggest peace marches in the history of the world, and the leaders of that movement didn't get the kind of red carpet treatment, open arms treatment, welcoming treatment that the head of a Free Martha committee of six people got. And I don't think it's it's not an accident. When you're in the inside, as I was at MSNBC, you see very much what the borders are. One question you can always say about a war, that it was mismanaged. You know, that's considered acceptable debate in the mainstream. How was the war prosecuted? But what you can't do is question the motives of a war or the motives of an intervention or an invasion. I mean, when I was at the day after Donahue was terminated, the Donahue Show, the most watched primetime show on MSNBC, the day after it was terminated, which was 3 weeks before the Iraq War began, an NBC memo leaked out that was never supposed to get public. But when it came out, it was an internal NBC memo. It explained all of the orders we'd been given in the previous months. It said that, quote, Donahue presents a difficult public face for NBC in a time of war. He seems to delight in presenting guests who are anti-war, anti-Bush, and skeptical of the administration's motives, unquote. Again, you can question whether the war was ill-timed, ill-executed. You cannot question motivation. If you do, you're not ready for prime time, as we learned when we were all canned at Donahue. You can't suggest that the war might be about military basing rights. You can't say it has any relation to empire or Israel or oil resources. That's just not acceptable. That internal NBC memo went on to describe their nightmare scenario where Donahue would become, and I'm quoting, a home for the liberal anti-war agenda at the same time that our competitors are waving the flag at every opportunity, unquote. That's the NBC internal memo. If you watched MSNBC after they terminated Donahue and they hired the Joe Scarboroughs, and the Michael Savages, you know that MSNBC was second to no one in waving the flag at every opportunity.
Yeah, it took up like two-thirds the screen.
Yeah, they even outfoxed Fox News. They had like a portrait of Bush on the screen. It's, you know, sort of their logo.
Sort of like Ataturk or something in Turkey.
Right.
Look, Jeff, we've got three people have been waiting very patiently on the phones. We're talking to Jeff Cohen today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. The number here, 333-9455. Toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to the phone lines now. Levington, Illinois, you're on the air with Jeff Cohen.
Hi. I think they have all those flags on so the people that watch that can figure out where they live. But I got a stupid question, I guess. Everybody's talking about these talking points. Is there like any place that are these sent out or
yeah.
Okay.
I think they're sent out, but they're sent out in a serious way that they're supposed to get just to the people who will use them as Republican talking points. They're not supposed to get out to the media. They're not, unless it's a Limbaugh or a Hannity, they're not supposed to get out to Democrats. But one got out a couple weeks ago. I think it was about Katrina, and I saw it going around. I could, I could send it to.
Is it posted online though?
Probably. I could send it to you, Bob. You could put it on your website.
Sure. Yeah, please send it to me, and I'll get it to our producer, Andrew Boyle, and we'll get it up.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got Jeff Cohen, our guest today in Media Matters. Champagne, you're on the air with Jeff Cohen.
Yes, thank you for coming on today. I was just thinking of some of the things that were not in the news lately, like the anti-war demonstrations and what's happening in Iraq with Telefer and the scandals in the White House is who leaked the plame name and all sorts of things. But I think our biggest story is John Roberts. I keep waiting for somebody to say anywhere. I haven't heard this from the questioning from the senators or any place. But here's a judge who makes decisions that gives any presidential power legitimacy in the law. Have you caught that? I'm really confused why no one anywhere is able to say that Roberts is going to twist the law to make sure that our imperial president gets legally any powers that they want to give him. I'll hang up and let you comment.
Right. Well, thank you, Colin. Yeah, Jeff, I mean, you've been monitoring the Roberts nomination and confirmation process. What's your sense of the press coverage of it so far?
I don't think it quite. You don't have to be a genius in Washington to understand that this is one of the most important events in American political history. What's happening this week? Some of them are giving it that play. I can't stand listening to NPR. You had to listen to NPR because they had it gavel to gavel, but the analysis is painful for me.
Why so? What is painful about it?
Well, Tottenberg, it's painful to see so much talk and so little criticism, so much talk and so little diversity of viewpoints. I'm so tired of hearing the same analysts over and over, whether it's Daniel Shore, it's tiresome. Public radio and public television was set up to be a forum for controversy and debate, and we seem to get the same tired centrism. And if ever some emotion and exchange of actual ideas about the momentous import of Roberts and perhaps a second appointee on the bench, you would hope that there would at least be a... I almost miss Crossfire on a week like that, because it's just not coming through. And I just, everyone's listening to NPR because they had the long coverage, but it's the analysis in between that I found very unsatisfying, and I'm sure many listeners did.
Now, I don't know how closely you've been tracking the Roberts story. Are there issues about Roberts you think should be drawn out and discussed and analyzed and put in front of the public that aren't getting much attention now?
Well, I just think we're all supposed to play this game that the words that this guy wrote don't matter, that the extremism contained in his memos about women's rights and civil rights and disability rights, that, well, that's him arguing for a client. It's truly shocking. It's like everything is spin nowadays. Words don't matter. Words on paper don't matter. You can always spin them into something the opposite of what they mean. Or you can spin it into such a confusion that people throw up their hands and don't look at the documents. The memos that this guy wrote, it showed the work of a real extremist. And I just don't feel that's coming through in the coverage.
Well, I can guarantee you that's not coming through from what I can see. Yeah. We're talking to Jeff Cohen today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We've only got about 13 or 14 minutes left, so if you'd like to call in, we do have lines open, and the number is 333-9455, toll-free number 1-800-222. 9455. Let's go back to the phone lines right now. Line 3, Champaign County, you're on the air with Jeff Cohen.
Well, I'm glad you just said that about Robert, so I don't have to. The NPR coverage was amazingly servile, obsequious, whatever you want to call it. No mention of the fact that while they were talking about a death penalty case and overturning them with good evidence that someone was being killed by the state of Texas, you know, outrageous lapse. And the other things are the fact that he used an exceptional excuse for not answering, not the usual one about I don't want to prejudge the case, but the fact that he was interviewed while he was judging a case and that his recusal was under scrutiny, that he couldn't talk about it in that case. It's very amazing. But since that, you did point at that, and I think it's quite important, I was just Googling the news site for the Cheney story about Colonial Pipeline that I think ought to be well circulated and commented upon. He's going into the hospital himself next week for some treatment. A call from his office diverted electrical workers in Hattiesburg, Mississippi area to this Colonial Pipeline away from their work, getting two hospitals back to status quo ante. They worked half their crews worked 16 hours on the pipeline. It's just an outrageous, and there are very little mention of it in the U.S. press. I mean, there's a television station down that way. There's Iraqnet, which is basically an Iraqi website that comes up. Hattiesburg, it's astonishing that no one will comment on this amazing use of crony power. Anyway, I hope people will search that story out. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And Jeff Cohen, are you familiar with the story of the caller?
I'm not that, but it raised for me this famous quote that I think people should always remember anytime they talk about the media and the Bush administration, Bush or Cheney. It's that quote from Ron Suskind, the reporter for New York Times Magazine. He was interviewing
and he wrote the O'Neill book.
Right, and then he wrote this long article about this faith-based administration and how it's like a faith-based presidency, not a reality-based presidency. And he was interviewing a top official who many of us suspect is Karl Rove or someone very close to Rove, but he didn't name him, Suskind. But the quote was somewhere around 2002. They were on their way into Iraq. They'd already invaded Afghanistan. And the quote was to Suskind was a dismissal of journalists and others in, quote, the reality-based community. You know, you in the reality-based community. And the quote goes on to say, we're an empire now. When we act, we create our own reality. And while you're studying that reality, we'll act again, creating yet a new reality. And the total arrogance about and dismissal and contempt for journalism, for fact-finding, for the existence of reality is really scary, because I think they had learned already back then that if they just kept spinning and spinning and spinning and questioning people's patriotism, especially in the wake of September 11th, they could basically get away with anything. And under cover of September 11th, they could push forward any domestic policy issue, any of their, you know, agenda, their domestic agenda, and just keep spinning and spinning and push, and that the reality would never dawn on enough of the American people for it to make a difference. And if you look at some of the polling, I'm sure you've mentioned it, Bob, repeatedly, that comes out of PIPA, you know, the Program on International Policy Attitudes from the University of Maryland, you see that the American people are very, very confused about basic issues, the most horrific indictment of the U.S. media is that on so many of those polls that show that half or more of the American people think that Saddam Hussein was behind the September 11th attacks. And when PIPA has done surveys of Bush supporters versus Kerry supporters, Bush supporters are so utterly clueless on what the facts are. And you can't really blame Bush. I mean, Bush is out there trying to spin and lie and the administration and exaggerate. But you count on reporters to sort through what's true and what isn't. And I know at MSNBC, if you sorted through things too aggressively to say, no, this is not true, well, then you would be accused of liberal bias, and that's the worst thing that you can be accused of.
Yeah, we had a caller who called in and left this message with our producer, Andrew Boyle, saying about this issue of liberal bias, quote, if you say it enough, people will believe it. It's talking about how this constantly you hear the refrain about liberal bias to the point that people accept it as having to be true since you hear it all the time, when in fact, as you point out, it's a dubious claim. How do you counteract that?
Well, I just think that emailer that is really on point, that I travel around the country and I speak in very different kinds of audiences, sometimes in small colleges, culturally conservative communities. And when I ask people why do they think liberal media, I realize what they're really talking about is libertine media. They're talking about what they see as trashy television. And it's not till they hear my lecture where I run through who owns the media that they realize, oh, okay, so Rupert Murdoch, this right-wing activist for Bush, he's bringing me a lot of those programs. And Sumner Redstone, who in 2004, the head of Viacom, who repeatedly and publicly endorsed Bush in 2004, he's bringing me some of these programs. And it's not till, you know, these programs, what a lot of people, especially cultural conservatives, not necessarily political conservatives, but culturally conservative middle America, look at a lot of these programs and they call it, quote, the liberal media. And it's really the unethical corporate media, but they're so clueless about who's bringing them this and why. But, I mean, I think the only way to counteract it is to build independent media. One of the great tools that people have used so effectively in recent years is the Internet. Blogs are booming. CommonDreams.org is huge. That's like one-stop shopping for progressive news and opinion, CommonDreams.org. Democracy Now! Is on the web as well as TV and radio, and it's booming. The show hosted every morning and every weekday morning by Amy Goodman. The only way you can counteract this is by building up your own independent media and talking about the real biases of the corporate mainstream media. And frankly, I believe that's happening. As I look at these polls going back many years, the amount of average Democrats or even slightly moderate liberal, their contempt for even the New York Times and as being too soft on Bush, and certainly the TV networks as being too soft on Bush, that kind of sentiment has really grown, and it's reflected sometimes in polls. But I think the fact that liberal media, liberal media, liberal media, that cry is repeated over and over is further evidence that in the corporate media, opinion shaping is dominated by the right wing. That's all that really says. The right wing has always dominated talk radio. The right wing dominates TV punditry with shows hosted by the Hannitys and the O'Reillys and the Scarboroughs. And they dominate op-ed pages. The most frequently, most widely syndicated columnists are Cal Thomas and Bob Novak and George Will. So they dominate opinion shaping. And that's why they're yelling liberal media so loudly. It's actually further evidence that the media aren't liberal, that cry, evidence-free in many cases, is heard over and over, but a serious critique of the media is only found in the margins of the mainstream. That's really good evidence that there isn't a liberal media.
Yeah, Jeff Cohen, founder of FAIR, producer of The Donahue Show, and longtime journalist and media critic, our guest today in Media Matters. You know, the President Bush is on his second term, and his recent polling numbers have not really been very impressive. I don't know where they stack up exactly compared to other presidents in their second terms, but I don't think they're favorable at this point. Will this lead to giving journalists a little more leeway or a little embolden their spines to basically get a little tougher, or do you think the structural factors you've been discussing are much too great to even have that affect it?
Yeah, I'm thinking more and more of the structural factors as being key. I think we've got to build up our own independent media and try to delegitimize the mainstream and spread the word to working people and
middle of the road, middle Americans about who's really controls the media. And we've got to sort of win people away from the corporate dominated media, because, as I say, the mobilization is good, but it only gets you to a certain point. I just read, you probably know all about this, you probably talked about it on your show, that Tom DeLay's chief of staff is now a top lobbyist for Time Warner.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, like, Disney's chief lobbyist is a high-level GOP operative, Preston Patton. I mean, when you look at what the corporations that dominate television, there's only five of them. You know, they have such a, they're right now almost integrated into the Bush regime, that while I think a few reporters will take advantage of the wake of Katrina to try to regain a little bit of their backbone, I don't expect it to be a major, major shift.
We're talking to Jeff Cohn today on Media Matters. We've only got a minute or two left, Jeff. And I do want to ask you, what are you working on now?
I've been trying to write some of my experiences at Fox News and MSNBC and even CNN. I appeared every week on the air at Fox News. And when you're there at a channel like that, even when you're so obviously ideologically isolated at the channel, just by being there every week, you learn a lot about what's going on and how the place runs. And then I worked 10, 12-hour days for close to a year at MSNBC during the run-up to the war. So I'm trying to distill some of what I learned by being on the inside. There have been other books written about the media, and articles about the media by people that went in and then got disillusioned. Well, I was never illusioned. So, you know, I'd like to think that some of my writings about being on the inside might be a little different. You know, I have a website where I'll start letting people know where this stuff will be appearing, is jeffcohen.org.
Okay, jeffcohen.org. We'll put that on our mailing list, too. Jeff, we have a last caller here. Let's go. Line one, Urbana. We've only got about a minute left. Do you have a question for Jeff Cohen? Hello? Line one, Urbana, you're on there with Jeff Cohen. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I was curious about whether or not Mr. Cohen follows Air America and whether he thinks that their approach, claiming to be the liberal media, actually has a place in this strategy of delegitimizing, you know, that phrase and the monopoly. That's all.
Thank you, caller. Air America, yeah. Jeff, what's your take?
Yeah, Air America, sometimes it's a little too much rant for me than, you know, factual discourse, but I'm thrilled that it exists. Not just the Air America program, some of which are great, especially Laura Flanders on the weekend. I'm listening to Stephanie Miller, who's on some of these progressive talk stations. She's doing media criticism for, it seems like, a half hour every day. And again, she's not just going after Fox News. She'll take on CNN and New York Times. I think Air America is playing a very, and related progressive radio talk station shows and talk stations are playing an important role in delegitimizing the media, not just focusing on Limbaugh and Fox, but even how soft on Bush the TV networks and New York Times and Washington Post have been.
Thank you, Jeff Cohen. I hear the band tuning up in the background. You know what that means. It's time for you to get back to your lovely daughter. I want to thank you so much, Jeff, for joining us today under very short notice.
Thank you.
Great show. I want to thank Andrew Boyle, as always, my producer. 1 week from today, 167 hours exactly, we'll be here with Barbara Ehrenreich talking about her brand new book, and it should be a great show, so please join us then. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters. This is WILL AM 580. Stay tuned for Tavis Smiley. Bye-bye.
Hey, are you ready to go out?
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance. Private instruction for social or competitive dancing, weddings, or other special events. Lessons for singles or couples, beginners or advanced of all ages. Information at 378-4601 or on your web, search at Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance.
This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, partly sunny with a high in the lower 80s and light winds becoming south around 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight, the low in the lower 60s with south winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high in the lower 80s with south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour, becoming southwest at 15 to 20 miles per hour in the afternoon. You're listening to WILL Urbana, made possible by the support of our listeners, the friends of WILL. It's 2 p.m. The Tavis Smiley Show is next.